I'm Robin Miller Brecker.
And I'm Karen Lenzer. Welcome to Seeking Center, the podcast.
Join us each week as we have the conversations and weed through the spiritual and holistic clutter for you. We'll boil it down to what you need to know now.
We're all about total wellness, which to us means building a healthy life on a physical, mental, and spiritual level. We'll talk to the trailblazers who will introduce you to the practices, products, and experiences that may be just what you need to hear about to transform your life.
If you're listening to this, it's no accident. Think of this as your seeking center and your place to seek your center. And for even more mega inspo, sign up for Seeking Center, the newsletter at seekingcenter.app. We feel divinely guided to our guest, Noelle Teubner. Karen and I were looking to further understand human design, and within a day, Noelle came into our life. Noelle is an embodiment and integration coach who helps individuals find their way to their own unique design. By incorporating her passion for human design, movement, and rituals, she offers guidance and awareness, assisting her clients in connecting to the true essence of who they are at a soul level. Her work also includes her passion and belief in the power of psychedelics and plant medicines to help create powerful change in her clients' lives. She has worked in wellness and fitness for over 20 years and continues to pass on her learnings as director of education at Mighty Pilates in Santa Monica. She is also co-host of the podcast, The Bliss Project, where she shares inspiring stories and struggles of what led her guests to where they are today and how they are using their journey to help and inspire others. Karen and I have both had the honor of having a reading with Noelle and can attest she is the type of human design translator that we were looking for. We can't wait to talk about everything. Let's get going. Hi, Noelle.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for the great intro.
We can test. I love that.
Your energy is infectious. We met through Instagram, which yes. I would say, thanks Instagram. And I could feel your energy even through that. And I think that's something that the three of us know about. You can feel energy without ever having met somebody.
Right. We're like on Zoom and talking. I love it. That's what starts to happen in this world. Once you start to open yourself into these different kind of energies, then those energies just start to align with each other, whether it's we live in the same state or across the country.
Exactly.
There's a recognition thing I felt immediately when we connected on Zoom. Just when I saw you, it was like, yeah, I remember her.
Exactly. I know. And I love that so much. And I feel like that's happening more and more these days with people I'm connecting with. And in general, people are starting to find that energy that feels like home.
Yeah. Yes. It's being on that same frequency. We talk about energy all the time, and we're all at different frequencies. Sometimes within a day, we can be in different frequencies, but yeah. In general, I think you are different frequencies at different times in your life. And I think we happen to all be on the same frequency. So let's dive into human design, because that is something, and for real, Karen and I were talking about it, and then you just popped in. So can you give everybody listening some background on what human design is?
I'll give you my interpretation of it and kind of the definition that I've come up with from getting to know it and working with it. But I find it to be this amazing tool that can offer you insight into who you are at your soul level. So I think of it as a soul map or a blueprint to who you were when you came into this world and who you are at your true authentic self. Just kind of like astrology. It incorporates the principles of astrology, the Kabbalah, the I Ching, your chakras, and also quantum physics to kind of develop this whole system of who you are. And when you learn to correctly engage with this energy of who you are set out to be, things just start to flow more easily. You have a better understanding of who you are. For me personally, it answered so many questions and just gave me such understanding and almost confirmation for why my life had been going the way that it was going and how I could make some little shifts and align essentially with my design. And then it opened up this whole new world over the past couple of years.
What I loved about it too, your blueprint, as you call it, is kind of set for you when you're born. And so it can be that consistent thing that you go back to that is a map.
Absolutely. I find when I work with clients, there's certain parts of your chart that show up at different times. When you have your whole chart reading done, as I explained to you guys when we did your charts, it's a little overwhelming. It's like, oh my gosh, there's all these components and pieces of mind and chart. But there's certain pieces, especially in the beginning, if you can just understand your type, your strategy, and your authority and your profile, that you can really set yourself off in a different direction. And then you're like, oh, I see how this energy is pulling it because of what's going on in my life. You don't have to totally understand every nook and cranny of it, but to really start to utilize it, which is something I also love about it, because you can take some of the basic principles of it, because it is a very complicated system as a whole, and actually start to use it in your daily life right away.
Well, can we talk about how it came to be? Because to me, it's kind of a newer modality in the realm of modalities.
Yeah, people have really just started having the conversation about it, I would say, in the last 10 or so years. It was a download. Ra Uru went out into the woods and had this amazing download of what this system was. And it's funny, I read an interview with him, and he wanted it to be so complicated so that you couldn't totally grasp it all at one time, because that wasn't what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to take the pieces of what you needed at the time. And then there's 5 different design types. Some say 4. We're going to go with 5 for just the ease of understanding. So you have your generators, your manifestors, your manifesting generators, your projectors, and your reflectors. Your generators and your manifesting generators make up about 80% of the population. And those are the ones that have been around along with your manifestors the longest. So if we break it down by type and go into what's called their strategy and authority, we'll start with your generators. So your generators are your go-getters, your 9-to-5, they can get stuff done, right? They have these energy centers that give them this amount of energy to keep them going. So their strategy in life is to respond. They're supposed to respond to life. Life is going to give them, hey, how about this? You want to try this? Oh, go do this and this. And they get to go, yes, no, yes, no. And it's really that simple, especially for a sage generator, which is a simple yes or no. It's that gut feeling. It's a yes or a no. And if it's not a yes, it's clearly a no. And it could be a yes for a day, and then the next day it's a different yes. So that's the other thing. Like, they can change their mind. And as long as they're following the true yes, they're actually going to be able to accomplish what they want to get done. And then you have an emotional generator that also brings in this emotional component that has to step in. So it's still a strong yes or no, but then they have this wave of emotion that has to come in and check in to really be able to go in that direction. Then you have what's called your manifestor. Your manifestors are here. They're more playful. They were the original design type. Their strategy is to inform. They get these urges, these ideas, like they got to share it. They're like, I got this. Oh, how about this? And they got to get that energy out into the world. But they also need the other energy types to help make their ideas happen. Same with them. They can be emotional authority. They can also be a splenic authority. A splenic authority shows up for a couple of the design types. This is more of a in the now moment decision. It's the life or death. I can do it right now. And that's where that energy comes from. So they have to follow that urge in that moment. Then you bring the manifestor and generator together, and you get the manifesting generator, which I think this is the best of both worlds. Robin happens to be this. Because you get this energy of like this playfulness, this spontaneous, this fun, and then you get to respond to life and get stuff done. So you can come up with the ideas and you can get stuff done. And same thing, you're either sacral, yes or no, or you have that emotional component as well. And then we come to the projectors. The projectors are a newer type, and me and Karen happen to be projectors. And at first I was a little upset about this, but now I embrace it because we're only about 20%, but we're here to guide. Projectors dropped in about 300 years ago, and they are here to basically look at the systems that are already in place and kind of show a better way. Our strategy is to wait for an invitation. And a lot of people get stuck on this. So it's not literally sitting and waiting for an invitation, but at some time points in life, it is literally sitting and waiting for an invitation. It's learning the art of being as opposed to doing. So your generators and your manifesting generators can do. If we try to do as a projector or a manifestor, even, we get exhausted. We burn ourselves out. And it's important for us to take the time to rest, recalibrate, and again, wait for the right energy to drop in. So even like for reaching out to you guys, it just dropped in to send you a message. And it wasn't like I didn't question it. It wasn't like you invited me to reach out to you, but there was something that dropped in. I was looking at your stuff and I was like, I'm just going to send a message. And then I sent it and forgot about it. It wasn't like the obsessing about it. That's the projector energy. And then you came back and you're like, hey, let's have a chat. So there's that flow of invitation that came in. And then our final one is the reflectors. The reflectors are only about 1%. They have none of their energy centers light up. So they are literally here to reflect back to us what's going on in the world. They don't have an authority because they have no energy centers lit up, but their strategy is to wait for a full lunar cycle. So I say that the reflectors get to be reborn every month. They go through the full what we do in a year cycle in a month. So a beautiful design type that's just starting to come in a little bit more, because we need that energy to start showing us, hey, how about we try this instead? So between the projectors and the reflectors coming in, we're basically taking all this energy that's been building the world over the last couple of years and getting us to where we're at now. And now we're like, okay, how can we do it a little bit better? How can we tweak it just so that we don't self-destruct, essentially?
Noelle, is it a really difficult thing to learn?
It's like everything in life. It found me, and it found me. I went through a separation in 2017. And of course, I'm searching for what's going to help me next, right? It kind of came across my table, if you will. And again, I was reading all the stuff about it. I'm like, oh, I'm a generator. That makes so much sense. I'm a go-getter. I get shit done. And then I pulled my chart and I was a projector. And on top of it, a self-projected projector, which again, Carrie, you happen to be as well. And I'm like, what? None of this makes sense. This isn't possible. So I kind of just brushed it aside. And then in 2019, it kind of dropped in again. And at this point, I was ready to actually dive in and listen. And so I had my chart read for me, if you will. And it was interesting because it was very basic. It was great information, but it was very basic. But the one thing I remember her saying is you have all your fear gates lit up. So you're here to work through your karma and it's going to help you in whatever you're going to do. You have 7 fear gates in human design. And I'm like, what does that mean? So I literally dove into the fear gates. I was like, I'm going to understand why my chart, because she'd never seen it before. I figured it was a thing. And in the process of doing that, I was like, okay, let me learn more about a projector. I really just dove into every piece of it. And the more and more I started to look into it, and then I had my son's chart done and he was a generator. And I'm like, okay, let me look into that. I was like, there is so much good information that's resonating with me. So I did a training and then I worked under somebody, and it's kind of how my life has always gone. It's just, even with fitness and stuff, it found me. I started just doing it. And then the teachers, the guides, everything that was going to show me the better way of doing this, along with me opening up and allowing in my own intuition and my own gifts again, I just started doing readings for everybody. I'm like, let me just practice this. Let me find what my rhythm is, and really listening to my gifts as I went along the way. It just cultivated into, oh, I guess I'm doing human design. So it became this constant learning, which again has been my whole life. And every time I do a chart, I learn something else. I don't think I'll ever grasp all of it, but I also don't think there's a need to. I think it's just what's aligning with the work that I'm doing at the time.
And when we were just talking about the person who downloaded Ra-Uru,
I think,
wasn't this downloaded to him in the 80s or early 90s?
So yeah, it was downloaded, but it went back to explaining like kings and queens and everything. If I'm remembering this right, he was in the woods and he had this spiritual experience and this was just gifted to him and downloaded. And he just started to write it out and then started to share the teachings with people.
Right. Yes, it goes back, definitely. The reason I'm bringing it up is because I think so many people haven't heard of it, like they've heard of astrology, is because it's a more recent modality introduced to us humans, right?
Yes. And you find the people who actually are more familiar with it, it was kind of the people that were going to the health food stores in the 80s before there was Whole Foods. It's that they're doing the Course in Miracles. Like there's all this from before that were considered the woo-woo or the alternative or whatever words we wanted to put on it, where now the collective has kind of shifted and there's just as many of us that are seeking this deeper understanding than the 20% or so that we're starting to. But it was necessary for that process to happen because we needed the energy to be moving in this direction to get us to where we are now, as far as where the world is now functioning.
Yeah. And then I wanted to also ask, within human design, there's this breakdown in a life cycle. And can you explain that a little bit? Because I know from our readings that you talk about this time between your
book. Well, this is for you specifically. So there's also the profiles in human design. And I think the profiles are super important. There's 12 profiles total and 6 different profile types. So you have a combination of 2 numbers. The first number is your conscious line. The second number is your unconscious line, which means the first number is how you feel like you show up in the world, how you feel about yourself. The second number is how you present. So number 1 is called the investigator. Number 2 is called the hermit. Number 3 is the martyr or the experiential. So it doesn't sound, people are like martyr. You want to have experiences. 4 is the opportunist. 5 is the heretic. And then 6 is the role model. So for you, Robin, you're 6-2. So the 6th line specifically has these 3 distinctive points in their life.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It.
So for your first 30 years, you're doing this trial and error, experimenting with the world and just trying stuff out. Then you go to what's called on the roof, where you now are taking everything you've learned and you're trying to figure out, okay, how can I now best put this with this and this with this and this with this, so that when you get to late 40s, early 50s, your Chiron returns, that's when you come down off the roof and now you're sharing it with the world.
By the way, I'm 47.
So it lines up with yours. And then Karen, you're 3-5. So you've got the martyr heretic. It's the same thing. The martyr is the experiential, bumping into everything. You wanted to try experience everything. Like, oh, how about this? So I call it like the bumper cars. You're like, oh, this didn't work. Oh, this didn't work. How about this? How about this? And then when you get to that 5 line in your life, that role line kicks in later on in life, because now you've had all these experiences and you need to go share them with the world. So it aligns. I was telling you guys this in both your readings. It's amazing that this is where you come to and what you're doing and creating the network and what you're trying to do right now, because you've taken all your experiences, both of you, and now you're ready to go and present them to the world. And because your design types, the way they work together, it's no coincidence that you are being able to do this the way that you are.
Thank you for explaining that, because I didn't realize that those life cycles were different for every person. I thought it was kind of a universal.
I didn't either until you just mentioned that.
If you can understand the basics of your own design and how you show up in the world and your strategy and authority, how you're supposed to move through this world, you can literally find this dynamic flow and ease within your own experience.
Well, that's what I found so enlightening for me, is some of the things that I think that I've struggled against are things that I've been taught, right? Just like,
the conditioning. Yeah.
Like, look, I'm a manifester. Are you kidding me? Look at how hard I work. Look at all I do. Because that's sort of the society's norm. That's everybody's. Yeah.
Well, we're taught, especially our generation, especially for women in our generation, we were taught be independent. You can do anything a guy can do. Go after what you want, to the point of I had adrenal exhaustion 3 times because my body is, hey, maybe you need to slow down. And I'm still going, still going, still going. And for me, everything shows up in my body and health wise to the point where it literally puts me in the hospital. And then I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I need to actually slow down a little bit. So they call it conditioning, or what we would call our limiting beliefs, or any kind of stuff that's been put on us to no fault of our parents and teachers and what have you, but just societally, how we're taught growing up was more of a generator type of energy. So if you are a projector or manifester and you don't fit into that mold, then that's where we find our struggles, or we feel like we're bumping up into walls. And where generators run into issues, or manifesting generators, is being told you must finish what you start. You must complete. And for the generator or manifesting generator energy, if they're not lit up by it anymore, then they're going to keep pushing in a direction and they're just going to continue to hit a wall. I used to get so frustrated with my son because he'd be like, I'm doing this. And he'd be really into something for a while. And then all of a sudden he'd like, not do it at all and be totally over here doing something. And then I realized as I learned more about him, then he'd go back to this when he was ready. And I always say he does everything in his own time. And it's so in his design. And now that I even have this confirmation almost and understanding, it's so much easier as a parent just to step back and allow for him. That's where human design can be such a great tool and asset as well, is with parents with children or partners, or even you guys working together, just to understand the strengths that each person has. Again, you don't have to know everything about everyone's chart, but you can be like, okay, they're really good at this. I'm really good at this. You guys, for example, a couple of things that I thought were key is you both have defined throat and G center. So with your throat center, you guys are literally here to speak your truth. You're supposed to get your truth, your vision out into the world, which is important. And then with the G center, you aren't always trying to fit into what everybody else is doing. You want to find your own way of doing things, which totally lines up with your profiles as well. So it's an interesting dynamic. And then Robin, you've got this manifesting generator energy. So you can come up with the ideas. You've got the energy to get them going. You can be like, okay, let's try this. Let's try this. And then Karen, you can kind of take a step back and see the whole picture and be like, oh, let's pivot a little into this. Or how about we try this? You're almost like the checks and balances to the idea.
You know, that really is us. That is. Yeah. I mean, Karen is also very much a doer and generator and all that.
Well, she can do that because she has your generator energy, especially as a self-projected projector. You're like me. We have 3 energy centers light up and there's none of them are motor energy. So for you, having a person who has some generator energy, when she's lit up on fire, you can kind of ride that wave with her. And what's interesting, as a projector, you need to retreat. And after you've had this big wave of energy, you need to retreat. And then Robin, you also have the 2 line, which is the hermit, which also needs to retreat. So it's finding these balances between really active on energy when you both are on, and then also knowing that you need to take some time to recover from it as well. The other stuff that came up for both of you is a lot about charisma, wanting to make improvements on things, making a difference in the world, being able to see patterns and know how to change or pivot depending on the patterns, and leadership. Gate of improving and leadership came up for both of you, and then resilience. So there's a lot of stuff in your chart that correlates with each other and that can build upon each other. And
it just is so insightful. I mean, as is astrology, as we all know, that's almost like a given these days. But this to me kind of gives another layer to even why you're here.
Yes.
Because for me, it was helpful to understand. It was almost like the consolation prize, to be honest, Noelle. Yes, but Karen, you're here because you want to bring this sort of light into the world. You want to bring it up to the next level. The manifestors and the generators have sort of created this foundational world that we live in now. But to know that that was a role that I'm here to play was kind of like, okay, all right, if I'm not going to be a manifestor, I guess.
They need us now. The reason the projectors dropped in the last couple hundred years is because the world needs someone who can take a look at everything that's going on and give it a little different perspective. Just like with the reflectors, we need the reflectors to be able to reflect back to us what's really happening in the world, because watching the news or whatever is being fed to you through social media is not really what's going on. So you need these energies to be able to come in and say, because the way the world's going and most of the people that are in that momentum are going to keep that momentum going until we start to shift and pivot. And again, it's little pivots that are going to take place over time, but you're going to see this more rapid, well, we already are, growth and shift that's starting to happen between now and the next 3 to 4 years, for sure. Which is so exciting.
That's such a validation. Well, and there's so much, as we've already started talking about, in how you can integrate this into your everyday life. And I wanted to share really quickly one of the things that when we did our session together, you pointed out, because what everyone should know listening is not only do you get a whole write-up, really breaking down all these different parts of you, but you also get this image. And the image really showcases this like a bird's eye view of your being, and then your energy is within that being. And then there's other parts of this image with numbers that correlate to these different aspects of you. And certain parts of it are shaded or not shaded. There's lines that connect different parts, or there aren't lines, which makes a difference as well. And I think for me, the reason I'm bringing all of this up is that I have a root that isn't defined, that isn't colored in.
Yeah.
So I'm not naturally anchored to the earth in many ways, is how I look at it. And having that image and a knowing of how I feel on a daily basis, it's so important for me to anchor into the earth in whatever way for me works. And so for me, it's visualization as well as meditation of literally seeing myself anchor into the earth every morning when I plant my feet on the ground, so that I know that I'm anchored both on the earth and that I'm also connected above with my crown chakra. That's what I do every day. But to have that validation and you saying that, it was this reminder to me never to skip a day of doing that.
Yes. Both of you have the open root and the open crown. So it's super important to have some, and it doesn't have to be a big 20-minute grounding session. Like you said, you can put your feet on the ground and you can like see yourself grounding into the earth and opening up to the light and just letting that energy flow through you. So now I'm connected.
Since our session and since I've been doing that every single day, things are flowing so much better.
I feel the same way. I think that that's why I am so committed to running outside. I cannot run on a treadmill because I think that that's my daily practice for literally connecting my feet to the ground. I'm outside and in the sky, feeling the sun shine on me.
Well, that's a projector thing too, just FYI. To reset yourself, either go to sleep or go outside.
Oh,
wow. Like that's like a huge thing. Like being
in
nature.
That makes so much sense for Karen.
Being in nature, being just to shift your energy when you're kind of hitting a wall. Again, just sit down, get it done. You only got 10 more things to do. And no, go step outside or go take a 10-minute nap. And you'll literally recalibrate your whole system.
So those things that you inwardly feel, but then you resist because you think, oh, you know, that's a waste of time, or I have too many other things to do. But if you just honor, it puts you back into that flow, which you use that word a a lot, Noelle. Can you talk about how understanding the human design of yourself does help the flow of your life?
Yeah, I think we all have those experiences in life where we feel like we're in our flow or connected. And it can be with movement or just however we feel in our life. We can all reflect back on times in our lives where things were just kind of flowing. Like my marriage was good, my job was good, my kids were good, I was feeling good. You can recognize these dynamics. And so it's the same thing within your chart. You find these pivotal pieces within your chart and understanding, even like we were saying with rooting down into stuff and these practices, that when you start to do little pieces and minimal of it, you start to find this flow. And then you can add the next little piece. And then you can add the next little piece. And then it starts to grab that momentum.
And for me, when you had said about the projector, about waiting for the invitation, that bugged me too. Until I, we're not taught. We're taught to be go-getters. Right. Yeah. But I really love what you said to me, which was really follow the inspiration. Let that be the invitation that I follow. And I do believe that that for me is the thing that gets me in the flow in the best possible way. When I follow the inspirational idea to do the thing, then yeah. things
flow. And with your authority is super important as a projector. So with you self-projected, or even if you're emotional or scenic, whatever your authority is, understanding I talk to myself a lot because I'm processing, or I do voice memos now so I can hear it play back to me. And so if I have a thought or an inspiration, I will talk it out with myself very quickly and then act upon it. Because if I don't act upon that inspiration in that flow moment, it's kind of like writing the text and then waiting 20 minutes before you send it. It's not going to land the same way as if you do it when you're in that connected flow. Same with the generator and manifestor generator energy. When you're going and feeling, yes, lit up, inspired, let's do this. And even, oh, I got to go do this. And no, let's just keep going in that flow and that path, because it's going to start to rapidly happen quicker, that you're still going to get to all those other things you need to do. So it comes down to your intuition. It comes down to how you feel it in your body and start noticing those cues for yourself. And human design can give you such an insight into what those cues are.
So helpful. You describe that beautifully. Thank you. Do you encourage people also, after they understand their human design, back to Robin's point of us not having our grounding chakra open, do we need to work with those chakras then even more? Is that a good blueprint for the chakras that we should be working with more to balance them?
I think it's yes and no. Because again, when I work with clients, there's some basic things we can start. So yes, let's start grounding in with your root chakra. But unless something's feeling off, like you have emotion, both of you have open emotional centers too, because of your solar plexus, which means you pick up on other people's emotions. So really understanding what's coming at you and what's actually yours is important. So say you are really in a state of, because of what's happening in the world, and now you're in that rabbit hole of feeling for everything that's going on in the world. And this becomes your story and your dynamic, being able to recognize it. So then that's a little time and attention we need to give. Is this my energy? Yes, I can have compassion for what's going on in the world, but I also need to like ground in my energy and move through this so that I can do what I'm supposed to do. Because especially now, with everything that's happening in the world, it's really easy when you have, especially an open emotional center, to take on. That's why I don't watch the news. I cannot watch the news because I'm the same. All of a sudden I'm sitting there and an hour has gone by and I'm like, oh my God, I'm feeling the pain of what I'm watching on the television. This is not serving me.
Yeah.
Right. Have an awareness of it, have compassion for it, but and do something if you can about it, but don't let it become your story. Like of why I can't get out of bed in the morning is because there's a war.
I think that we talked a lot about boundaries and being able to set those boundaries and the ideas that you just gave. If you are this type of person, how do you continue to have the flow come through you? But recognize.
And different stuff will show up at different times. That's why when I work with people, it's a 3 to 6 month commitment. And it involves more than just human design. We get into movement and rituals and sometimes psychedelics. So as you start to bring this stuff in, you really need the time to see, because you can't undo 40 something years or even 30 something years in a week. Once you choose this path of a deeper understanding, there's going to be a constant unveiling and a constant unraveling of things and then understanding, but you learn to put it back together quicker. You learn to move through it quicker when you have these tools underneath you.
Well, and just speaking, you just mentioned psychedelics, and that is another part of your background, psychedelics and plant medicines. Karen and I, again, have been talking like human design, we've also been talking a lot about psychedelics and plant medicine, and they are becoming more and more prevalent. And we just
and more mainstream conversation.
Yes, yes, yeah. Because they can really help heal in different ways than I think people understand. Can you talk about your own experience with psychedelics and plant medicines and some of the most common types that are being used today?
So it's interesting because if you would have asked me 3 years ago if I'd be talking openly and on a podcast about psychedelics and in my world, I would have been like, yeah, no, because it was always kind of this thing. And it again, it's something that has shown up in my life over and over again at these amazing times. So for me, psychedelics and plant medicines, there's a lot of medicines that fall into this category. So you have traditional plant medicines that most people talk about, ayahuasca, and then you have psychedelics like psilocybin, LSD, MDMA is in there, ketamine's like a therapy, but there's so many more, too many to name. But the ones that are most prevalent right now, I think, are these combos and another one, DMT. So my experience, and I didn't know these were my experiences until later, again, reflecting on life, I found MDMA or ecstasy in my 20s, like most people, in a club setting. And it was profound for me. And I didn't understand why I was the girl off dancing in the corner by myself, having these amazing, magical experiences. And I was connecting something deeper than me and I knew it, but my 20-year-old brain did not understand what it was. And when I decided to get out of the club scene and that world, I was like, I am sober. I'm not doing drugs. I'm not drinking. That's not my world. So I got really into yoga and meditation and all these tools, if you will, what I call integration tools that kept me on my path and on my journey. And in my mid-20s, I went on a yoga retreat to Peru and we stayed in the jungle of the Amazon. And I think it was the third or fourth night we were there. They introduced us to the shaman. They're like, do you guys want to do ayahuasca? I had no idea what ayahuasca was. They're like, it's these plants from the jungle and they give you these visions and everybody else is doing it. I guess I'm doing it too. So we all went in a room and, or I should say a hut because there were huts. And I remember I had such control issues. Nothing affects me. I'm strong. I got this. So we all drank the stuff. People are having stuff go on. They're throwing up in buckets at nothing. Only thing I remember from that first night was I could see the shaman rattling these leaves and I could see her face changing. I could see all the shamans that had come before. And I was like, huh. So I get back, you're in this room for a couple hours. So then I get back to my own room or whatever. And I start having these visions and I was like, whoa. And I was a person who always liked the visions, no matter what kind of medicine I was on. When that started to happen, I'm like, ooh, I like this world. So the next morning, the shaman came up to me and she's like, you go again. So the next night I went with the shaman by myself. And that experience, it was so, I changed my life. I came back to LA. I was like, I've got to teach yoga and save the world and get this information out to people. But I was 20 something years old and had no idea how to do it. So I was already teaching fitness, but got more into this and yoga and spirituality. It just kept me on this learning path. And so throughout the years, a psilocybin journey would show up.
How was that different, let's say, than the ayahuasca when you did
psilocybin?
That? Yeah.
They're different, but the same. I mean, it's interesting. So ayahuasca for me was because I've had very profound psilocybin journeys too. They give you visions. They allow you to see things you can't see. They open you up in a way that your conscious mind, because it quiets your conscious mind. So you can actually tap into your unconscious, whether you're tapping into trauma or memories or other stuff, or just for me, what's been really big, and especially in the last couple of journeys, I still have this control. I still have this holding energy of trying to control something. So in a lot of my journeys as of late, I feel like I'm open and everything's amazing. And this is great. And they come out and they're like, yeah, no, you were like this, hunched in a little ball. I'm like, what? So it's interesting how your body holds on to certain energies and your mind keeps you in those stories. And then when you're on this medicine, it busts all that open and allows you to see stuff. So throughout the years, it kept dropping in. And then I had an experience with microdosing in 2016, which again, I was like, what's microdosing? And so it's a microdose. So where you, instead of taking like a full dose, or I'll use mushrooms, for example, a gram of mushrooms, you take 0.1 or 0.2. So you take a smaller dose and you don't have the psychedelic or the experience effect. Essentially what happens in your brain is it lights up your whole entire brain. So instead of a pharmaceutical where if you're feeling anxiety or depression or something like that, that pharmaceutical goes directly to that part of your brain and helps that part of your brain. The psychedelic goes in and lights up your whole entire brain. And then it starts to boost that area that might be depressed or anxious so that everything starts to balance out. So it's kind of like that energy of if you're like a 10 in anxiety and road rage and reacting and that energy, now you're like a 6. It just kind of brings you down. And with microdosing, when I work with clients, it's also incorporating supplements. So whether it's different mushrooms or different things that complement it so that you have this overall just nice effect as opposed to the highs and lows that can come sometimes with pharmaceuticals or even with journey. It's why it's important when you're doing these higher doses of medicine journeys to have support before and have support after integration to be able to actually take your experience, support the brain, support everything that needs to go on, set your intention, go through the experience and then be able to implement it back into your world. And so for me, what was interesting with microdosing, I was going through some problems in my relationship and I was given this to try for like a month. And it literally took the anxiousness and anxiety, which I didn't even realize I had. I knew it was there. And again, I was around my life for about 3 months and then it went away. And I found microdosing again in 2020, ironically, when the world shut down. I'd had surgery to take out my implants and I was just going through some adjustments and what have you. And the person that I was hanging out with, he was like, have you ever microdosed psilocybin? And I'm like, never even thought of it. I was like, sure. What else am I doing? The world shut down. Let's try this whole thing. And I was tapping into human design. All this stuff was starting to happen. And I really connected with the psilocybin and the mushrooms. And I was like, huh, like this just makes things, again, flow. You start to find this flow. And athletes talk about it who use, especially psilocybin, you have this flow state that starts to happen. Because when you do a microdose, you don't do it every day. You either do a protocol of 3 days on, 4 days off, or 4 days on, 3 days off, or two, one. You don't do it every day because you will build up a tolerance. It has its natural ability. So you can't go too far, if you will, especially with psilocybin. And so, which is why it's such a beautiful medicine. So you want to support it with other supplements and herbs, but you do find on the days that you have this extra little bit of a flow state. If you're an athlete and a runner, like you go for your longer run, you have this little bit, or surfing is amazing. You get in this just beautiful connection with the energy of the land and the water and just what you're doing. So for me, it's just this extra little piece that makes it just a little bit better. And I think the reason it's becoming such a topic of conversation is they're having such great results, especially with psilocybin, MDMA, and ketamine for PTSD and depression and severe disorders. Because again, it's treating the whole brain and it's helping you to restructure. And they talk about with quantum physics, define those neural pathways in your brain. So you actually can come up with a new feeling, a new memory, a new connection that doesn't trigger you. You're able to cut those out. And this is just, it's the fast forward button. You could meditate for 20 years. I've tried that. It works great too. And it's a great supporting tool, but why not add something in that's just going to make it a little bit, and I don't want to say easier because you definitely have to work through your stuff and do all the other stuff, but it just kind of takes the edge off. It just allows you to go a little deeper, a little bit quicker, so you can get to your next step and you can get to your next step and you can get to your next step.
Because I think the misconception a lot of people have are, well, what I remember from the 60s when I saw people taking LSD and that vision of it looking like it was an escape versus a connection.
And it absolutely could be that for people. There are plenty of people that come into the journey space that are looking for this escape or this aha or this like amazing feeling or whatever it is. But again, that's where the integration work comes in, because you can go have this, oh my God, life is just that simple experience.
So you lead them. It's not just you're sitting in a room and absorbing the experience. You literally are there leading somebody through a specific memory or situation.
So yes and no. So you don't want to guide in the sense of asking leading questions. You don't want to put thoughts into someone's head. So when someone's having an experience, you just want to check in on them. You want to, in medicine ceremony kind of center, if you're doing something more specific like a ketamine to get to the root of stuff, you can ask a little bit more leading questions. But in a ceremony setting, it's letting them have the experience, because you really want them to come up with the words. You don't want to give them the words. You want them to come up with whatever they're feeling and be supportive. And supportive sometimes could be touching, but touching sometimes could anchor in that feeling even more. So it's really having this awareness of where that person is in the state and what they're needing at that time. Is it when I'm curled up in a ball and having this moment, having somebody come over to me and just help get my shoulders back and rub on my jaw and just energetically give me a safe space to be in? Huge for me. Because clearly I wasn't feeling safe and I was curled up in a ball. So learning how to read what's going on in that situation.
You're saying though that it works best when someone is going in with an intention.
Yeah, with an intention, which is what the embodiment and integration work is all about. Setting you up with the intention of what you want to go in. Because you might be going in because you just got out of a relationship and you want to let the relationship go. But when you start to do some of the initial work, you realize every relationship in your life has been like this and you need to let that pattern go.
Yeah.
The deeper work that starts to happen. And sometimes people don't want to go that deep first. They just want to go fix that first relationship. But again, as you start to do this, you realize, oh, that's my pattern my whole life. Let me have some compassion around that and some understanding. And how can I now work through that?
Oh, so helpful.
Well, and when you're
as someone who would be working with you or another type of integration or embodiment type of coach, would you, and who also specializes in psychedelics and plant medicines, would you assess from somebody, number one, what their intention or let's say issue is, and then decide, okay, this is the type of psychedelic or plant medicine that they should experience?
100%. And if maybe they start with microdosing, maybe they start with just some supplements to get them there. I have a huge intake form. Some of the people I trained under, it's really important to know what's happened. There's a thing called a timeline that I like to do with clients where you literally go from like your birth and you just kind of mark little instances. It could have been that someone beat you up in the playground when you were 8 years old, but you just kind of put some markers in there, because a lot of times when you sit down and do this free flowing timeline, you forget things that happened that actually had an impact on you. And again, it's something just for me to reference. It's not something we have to dig deeper into, but if you're talking about certain things and I'm seeing a pattern in our initial conversations, and I can look at some of the experiences that you had, then I can see deeper what is probably going to come up when you go into this experience. I think microdosing for people, if someone has never done anything, is a great entryway, because it gets the medicines in your body and the medicine communicates. And so when you call in your deeper journey, you already have that energy flowing through your body. So it's not as scary or as traumatic. I mean, I still get nervous when I go into certain journeys, you know, it's just, even though I know what is coming at me and I really like being in that energy and on the other side, if you will, there's still a part of me that tries to hold on for a second before I just freaking let it go. And it's amazing to me and I'm fully aware of it, but I'm human, but it's unknown.
Yeah.
So, but it's a beautiful space to be in. So microdosing is a great tool to have in your daily life, if you will, and also to just get you in that energetic so that that jump or that leap from a microdosing to a full-blown journey isn't as drastic.
Well, and it seems like working with somebody who is experienced and not just experienced with their own journeys, but has the knowledge, education, and processes in place to really help you get the most out of it and make you feel safe and secure.
Well, and that's the biggest thing right now. There's so many practitioners out there, which is amazing because it's available, but most aren't doing integration. Most call integration the morning after, where you sit and have a circle for an hour and talk about your experience for the night and maybe a follow-up call. And so people don't understand the importance of integration. And I don't think I would have understood it, except I feel like my whole life was integration. All the meditations, the yoga, the vipassanas, all these different things that I went on, the journaling, the movement, all these practices that I put in place, and now adding in the human design, it got me ready to be able to now say, okay, these are the tools that are going to help make this just easier and make it more of a flow, if you will. And also get you so that you can have this gradual progression and move at a little bit quicker pace than if you're leaping too high and coming down and have it the pendulum basically swing in the other direction and not be in your face, which is what happens to a lot of people. So then they go back and have another journey. So you're just literally like stacking these journeys on top of each other, but you're not getting anywhere.
Because totally. It's like, I think that happens to a lot of people who don't know, because there isn't this education out there. No?
And it's just starting to be talked about more, which is great. There's not a one size fits all. That's why I call the work that I do your unique design. There's not what's going to work for you isn't going to work for me, and what's going to work for this person isn't going to work for that person. We really have to cultivate what your unique design is, and it's going to change. And I think it is important, if you're going to be any kind of practitioner, guide, trip sitter, any of these words that you use, that you do experience that medicine, that you do understand what that journey is like in your own body. It's kind of like with fitness. I would never teach anything in fitness that I didn't try in my own body first, because how can I ask somebody else to do it if I haven't done it? So I think that's another important aspect as well.
Absolutely. And talking about just actually fitness and wellness, because movement and ritual is such an important part of your life, is there anything that you suggest or can recommend for somebody to incorporate into their daily life in terms of ritual or movement?
I think it's important. Some people need to have routines. They need to do the same thing every day. And that your human design chart will tell you that as well. And some people need to change it up. And I was a person in my chart who definitely needs to change it up. But I was also the person that did everything the same way all the time, because that's, again, what I was taught to do. So it could be something as simple as going outside, grounding your feet, taking a walk and feeling the energy of that. But for some people who are more generator energy or just more active, they need to go for the run. They need to dance and shake it out. One of the best tools, I think, for all energy types and that can shift your energy in any moment is just putting on some music you like, dancing or jumping and moving around the room, because you can jump, even tapping on your body, using your voice, vocally releasing stuff is huge. Most of us are afraid to use our voice. Even if you'll go to classes and they'll breathe loud in yoga and some people will give you a weird look, but that release, you don't have to know what that energy is. It just allows you to let it go. I think it's important ritual-wise to have something when you wake up in the morning to open up your day and something when you go to bed at night to close your day. So whether that is a grounding practice, journaling, praying, lighting a candle on your altar, incense, whatever it is, just something that's basically saying, I'm opening myself up to this day, to the highest and greatest good for what's meant for me and my family all around me, whatever those words are or thing, just to say, here I am, day, use me, utilize me in the best way you can. And then at the end of the day, whether it's gratitude journal, reflecting, again, closing meditation, just something to say, I'm closing out my day so that whatever energy from that day that does not need to go with you to sleep, doesn't go with you to sleep. So I think those are the two, if I can say, most important moments. And then throughout your day, I think everybody needs to move, whatever that means to you. If it's yoga, if it's Pilates, if it's running, if it's walking, I think everybody needs to physically move. And it's not hard to put on your favorite song and dance around your room.
Oh, I love those.
That opening and closing of your day.
Yes.
I know intuitively is the right thing, but I don't do it often enough at the end of the day. I'm very conscious in the beginning, but not.
Right. We all start off good, right? And then, and then we're like tired. And then we're like, even if it's just you lay down and you're like, I'm grateful for this day. Thank you.
Yeah. I think
like it can be that quick.
It's true. I have been doing that now for probably a year where I'm consciously doing that. For me, it's actually taking a crystal and putting it under my pillow and saying, and so then I feel like I have the energy plus I'm saying, thank you for this day. And let me have a restful night's sleep. And
crystals, tools like that are amazing. A tangible thing that you can connect something to. Ritual candles are amazing for that. Even with writing in your journal and processing the day, having something that you can physically connect to, it's an anchor. We call anchors. Yeah. It anchors it more into your system. And an anchor can also be, if you're having a gratitude practice, you put your hands on your heart and ground into your body, right? So that's an anchor in your body so that when you get to that place, throughout your day, if you need that anchor, put your hands on your heart. So it's another practicing tool. And anchors are super important too in the psychedelic and journey space and knowing that you're safe. Having, if somebody's going in that's having a deep trauma, you can create an anchor in a sense of a safe anchor.
Oh my goodness. Is there anything from your life experience that I feel like you've woven in your life experience, but is there anything else that you feel would be helpful to share with everyone listening right now?
I've had a lot of life experience, with health issues and stuff that very much could have stopped me along the way. Also with personal issues with just how my life has unraveled. And there were moments throughout my life where I was like, why is this shit keep happening to me? Like, why can't I just have kidneys that work? And why can't I just have hormones that work? And why can't I just have a marriage that works? But now I realize where I'm at now and with the work that I've been doing throughout my life and that I'm so guided to do right now and helping others is by having all these experiences that I can connect back to and draw from. It's allowing me to be able to connect with other people and then also serve them. It's having all the fear gates in human design, because I have an awareness of all of them. I can identify with each and every one of them when they show up in my client and with people around me. So it's a gift. All these things that I've had to work through, I can really truly see as a gift, and I'm still working through, I can see are gifts because they're only going to allow me to be able to help other people on their journeys along the way.
Wait, what is a fear gate, by the way?
Make sure you add to it too, that there's two sides of it. That's
right.
That's
an awareness. Yeah. And if you're, so your fear gates live in your spleen. There's 7 fear gates and the spleen energy is the fight or flight, the survival. Think of a caveman, either like we find food or we die. That's the energy that comes out of the spleen. And so you have these different fear gates, which they're not so good energy shows up as a fear. Fear of running out of time, fear of the past repeating itself. But in an awareness side, I'm really good at timing. I'm really good at taking the patterns and what I've learned from the past and using it into my future. There's a thing called a sun gate in human design, which is one of these main overpowering gates in your design. And mine happens to be the 44 fear gate, which is the fear of the past repeating itself. And I was the queen for so long of going back into my past, replaying the past, creating new outcomes that couldn't possibly happen, but I'd create the new outcome and spend all this energy in replaying my past instead of focusing on what I wanted to build in the future. And now that I have this awareness, because this is the main gate in my energy. So having this awareness of, okay, what can I pull from those past experiences so that I can create a better future? That's me turning that energy around, because I'm still going to want to go back and rework the past. It's just in me. It's in me consciously and unconsciously. It's driving a lot of me. But now I have this awareness of, okay, how can I actually use those experiences, those different things that happen, so I can create a better future for myself. And when I get drawn to look back in the past more, I then just go, nope, we're going in this direction to the future. So by having that awareness, I'm able to pivot and shift. So the fear gates are great because they can offer a protection, a safety for you, especially through different times in your life. But once you gain this awareness of them, you're able then to like use it as a tool on how to not fall back into those fears.
Ooh, that's so helpful.
Yay, I love it.
Oh my goodness. Well, we actually talk about the Bliss Project and how...
Okay, so that's my podcast. That came out during COVID as well, an inspiration of just needing a creative outlet. And then this passion for wanting to tell people's stories. My degree is in documentary film, and I thought I was going to tell stories and change the world. And I still might. But I wanted to take people's experiences of what they've gone through in their life, good, bad, or indifferent, and how it led them to the amazing work they're doing today. It's a little bit of everything, but what I've found is we have conversations about plant medicine. We've had it about miscarriages and infertility, which was a huge one for me because of my own experience. And it's these conversations that only open up stuff in me, but there's been this amazing flow and path of the guests that have come on that have supported the next one and the next one and the next one. So it's been a really fun experience for me because even if one person listens and it inspires them or changes them or just lets them know it's okay to be feeling however they're feeling, then that's what matters to me. And I know I'm doing something good in this world.
Couldn't agree more, which is again why we're on the same frequency.
Exactly. I so love this frequency.
I love how you keep saying how all this stuff keeps finding you because it is the projector. I've just learned so much about that for myself.
And it's a daily practice because with everything in life, I want it to happen way faster than happening, right? And so it's a day, I don't want to say struggle because it's not necessarily a struggle anymore, but it's a daily awareness and practice. This point in my life, especially this last year, where I feel like I'm in this rowboat in the middle of a lake and I don't have oars. I don't have anything. And if I try and paddle or get the boat to go anywhere, I'm just going to struggle. So I literally have to wait and someone's going to come by and push me or the wind's going to blow. And sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes I'm just sitting there in my boat, but getting comfortable in that not knowing, and will it come tomorrow?
That is such an incredible visualization. Thank you for sharing that. I'm so glad that just came out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been such a strong knowing for me. And that the more I try in a sense to make it doesn't mean like I'm sitting on my high knee doing nothing. I'm doing. And then there are days where I'm sitting watching Netflix. Don't get me wrong. There are days where I need to just check out or like I'm sitting at the beach. What's called? I'm following what's dropping in. Okay. This is what I'm supposed to be doing today. This is what I'm supposed to be doing today.
So helpful. Oh, I love this conversation.
Yes.
I have too.
Thank you so much. For more from Noelle and to find out how to work with her one-on-one, visit Noelle Tubner. That's Noelle, Noelle Tubner, TEUBNER.com. NoelleTubner.com. You can listen to the Bliss Project wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you.
And then also on Instagram and at NoelleTubner is a great place to reach out to me and message me because I love invitations of direct messaging.
Yes.
Spoken like a true projector.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on, you guys.